open up with a parasail, and then he's going to have, well, in the beginning, he'll be taking them out of the water. But ultimately, he'll be trying to catch the booster coming down through the atmosphere with a helicopter. The helicopter will be able to bring the booster back to a floating ship. The ship will bring it back to New Zealand, and he'll be able to refurbish the first stage and relaunch again. And any other questions or comments? I'm starting to run out of time, so let me just see if anybody has anything to say. This is WS2N for the SpaceNet Report for the TechNet. Enter exit. JN, go ahead. Wesley.
Yeah, I'm kind of puzzled with a few things. Besides that the new rover is having the 40 compartments for the samples that would be drilled off the surface of the Mars, for example, looking for the life on Mars. This is an old discovery from 1918, and it's from Science Center of Arizona, and that was the NSA JPL Space Science System. It's about the lake where 1.5 kilometers, which would be 1 mile beneath the ice on Mars, there is a strange light coming out of it, which might, from one hand, be the reflection of the light coming on it, and it was spotted under the ice in the light blue which shows the reflections, if there are reflections from the bottom of it. That was the discovery of Professor Orsay, O-R-O-S-E-I. Did you hear something about it? What is that called?
You're saying a frozen lake on Mars? As far as I know, they've never found one of those yet. They found, you know, with a scoop from Pioneer, from the Phoenix lander, which landed on the northern hemisphere of Mars. The scoop dug down, and they took pictures, and they sure enough, they saw a white shiny substance. And they figured out that was ice. And the reason they knew that is because it sublimated it and it was gone the next photograph that they took the next day, because it actually evaporated. But as far as I know, I've never heard of anything like that. Of course, some light coming down from inside the roof, coming out of the lake, that's definitely aliens. Wesley, I don't know. I don't know where you've heard this one. And they discovered it using some telescope from Arizona. I don't know if I heard any of that right. Back to you anyway. I'm going to get ready to sign, but we're starting to get late. N2XJN, WS2X.
That's July 25th of 2018. That's by BBC News, Science and Environment. The title is Liquid Water Lake Revealed on Mars. And it says researchers have found evidence of existing body on liquid water on Mars. Further down, when you go how it was found, it is not really that it was found from the Earth. It is just that the picture was published by USGS Astrology Science Center of Arizona. But on the other picture, exactly like that, but there is a close-up on it. It says NASA, JPL, Malin Space Science System. It is definitely saying radar instruments like Mars is examining the surface of intermediate subsurface of the planet by sending out a signal and examining what is bounced back. So the method of examining was sending the signal and bouncing back. But okay, so let me concentrate on this one. The continuous white line on the top of the radar results above marks the beginning of the South Polar Layered Deposit, a phyllopastry like accumulation of water, ice, and dust. Beneath this, researchers spotted something unusual. 1.5 kilometer under the ice, 1.5 kilometer, 1.74 is 1 mile. So it would be 1 mile deep to the ice. In light blue, you can see where the reflections from the bottom are stronger than surface reflection. There is something that is to us the telltale sign of the presence of water, says Professor Ostey. And then they have a possible live discussion at the end of the article, and that is signed by Dr. Puttle, that was talking to BBC News and to Exia.
Okay, well, sounds like the antenna. They have an 80-meter transmitter antenna on Mars Express, the European Space Agency, and a couple of years ago they send signals down, and then, you know, they can tell the difference between hard surface and possible ice under the planet. Sounds like they're taking some part of that story and somehow creating this other story that this light blue color that I've never heard about. So I can't help you on that one, Wesley. But you know, if there was a big lake, that was obvious. There would be pictures all over. I'm not sure what you're reading. And if I see something like that, of course I'll read it. That's okay. Any other comments? If not, I'm going to turn it back to Dr. Roy. Let me unkey. All right. Thank everybody who listened to the space portion of the net, of the TechNet. And let's see, tomorrow is Monday. We'll be on the ClubNet that comes on at 8:30 on these repeaters, followed by the Swap and Shop. And you always have Newsline. I always like listening to that. So we'll do that for Monday. If not, send it back over to Roy, AC2GS, WS2M. Thanks for putting that picture up. I don't know if anybody's going to bring it up, but it's pretty weird. It's even strange if you bring up the video and you watch this whole video of this guy taking off and landing. Back to you, Roy, WS2M.
AC2GS, thank you very much, Paul. Thank you for the SpaceNet report, and always thanks to Andy, WA2C, DL, for Andy's Corner. I just wanted to mention, I think you were alluding to something called a pulse oximeter. It's a cute little device. It snaps on to a fingertip in other places. It shines infrared, and by judging the absorption, it can tell you stuff about oxygen flow in that extremity. So you can get one in Amazon. I think they're about $30 now, and a lot of people bought them because of the COVID thing. Well, thank everyone who participated tonight. As I always say, it's you guys that make or break a technical net, so I appreciate your participation, your clever ideas, your suggestions. I enjoyed it all. I will remind people again to please check out the link page, roy.ac2gs.com. In addition to Paul's picture and a new YouTube link of people faking the soap bubble and the laser trick, there's a lovely little electron microscopic view of COVID attacking lung tissue. Gives you a nice idea of what might be going on. And also, there's a link to the FCC. The FCC is considering charging us $50 every time we renew our license. And it is time for them to listen to us. So it's a link to where you can read an article and then go to the FCC and tell them what you think of paying $50 for renewing their license, your license. Let me drop for a sec. Holyoke, once again, thanks to everyone. Little reminder, if you have any questions and you can't get on the technical net, or if you would like topics to be discussed, or if you have some puzzles you'd like to share with me so I can share them with the rest of the people here, or you want me to pass on some message to Paul, the email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. Link page, as I mentioned before, is very simple, roy.ac2gs.com. And Mike, KC2NJI, has his website, amateurradio.tv, that has the archives of the technical net since September of 2006. We'll be back next Sunday night on the 13th. The 20th is a little dicey because Rosh Hashanah ends about 14 minutes before the TechNet begins. So it's going to take me a little time to boot up everything. So if I'm not there on the 20th at exactly 8 o'clock, hopefully you'll sit quietly and wait for me, and I will come. The 27th, though, we're going to be on hiatus because Yom Kippur is in there, and I go radio silent for Yom Kippur and for Rosh Hashanah. So, once again, want to thank everyone for their participation. I want to wish everyone a safe week. The virus is still out there, so be cautious. Don't be frightened, but be cautious. And I share every week one of the great lines that Dick, K2IW, ended many of the technical nets. His advice was, be kind to each other. And I think that's always appropriate, and in these times, more so. So this is AC2GS, and I will be clear, and I will talk to you again next week.
Paul, if you're still there, WB2BX.
Oh, okay, BXO, yeah, sure, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm coming in through Echo Link, and, you know, somebody keeps keying the repeater between transmissions, so it's difficult to get Echo Link to key. And anyway, yeah, I think I recognize the story Wesley was talking about the detection of the subsurface plate on Mars. I believe that it's factual. I do remember the story as, I don't recall whether I saw it in the Times or saw it online somewhere. I think I've both heard it on TV and saw it online. In any case, the story seems to be that, yes, the lake is down there, but there are doubts about whether or not it could harbor life as we know it, because it's believed to be grimy, full of perchlorates. And you and Roy probably understand better than I do, but my understanding is that life as we know it does not coexist very well with perchlorates, which are a form of salt. Apparently, life as we know it doesn't do very well with.
Thank you very much for taking that. Yeah, it's the article was by Mary Houghton, M-A-R-Y-H-A-L-T-O-N. It's a science reporter of BBC News. Let me drop.
You know, subsurface ice. And I guess if you go deep enough, you know, the temperatures could go higher and you could wind up with liquid water. So they might be theorizing that. I have not heard any confirmation about any of this. I'll look into it, and yeah, thanks for that. I'll turn it back to you, and then I'm gonna say 73 for now. Back to you, BXO, WS2.
Yeah, okay, Frank, I think you inadvertently called me Dick. I wish I was that good. In any case, yeah, it's an interesting story. You probably watch it if you follow Jean-Michel Gauthier's Event Horizon on YouTube. He interviewed, the head of planetary science for NASA, who's, I think he's higher up than that by now, a NASA researcher who's been with NASA since he was a college intern his entire career and gotten all the way to the top of the pyramid, or nearly so. And his public position now is that there may be life elsewhere in the solar system. And that seems like a pretty bold position for NASA to take, considering that they have not wanted to put an experiment on a rover that would be definitively verify the very controversial findings of the Viking from the 70s a year ago. Anyway, life's getting interesting in more ways than one. 73, WB2BXO via Echolink.
Yeah, be excellent to see you.
Like, very good. Have a good night, 73. And we'll follow all this Mars stuff and Moon stuff next week. 73, WS2 and clear.
And to XGN, Rick. Yeah, the article was by Mary Helton, science reporter, BBC News, at July 25th of 2018, and that's by News of BBC. It's easy to find it. The article, the title is Liquid Water Lake Revealed on Mars. When you are at BBC. Okay, let me go further. Some more information. The lake sits under the planet's south polar ice cap and is about 20 kilometers, which would be 12 miles across. The previous research found possible signs of intermittent liquid water flowing on the Martian surface, but this is not the first sign of persistent body of water discover on that planet. We have plenty of other very detailed pictures showing water flow in the past, and some curiosity. Let me jump on. Some curiosity led to discover of Double Lake. The Double Lake structure was due to that intermittent liquid water flowing. It was like you open up the valve and the faucet and the water flows, and it was some kind of rain or snow melting rapidly, and then the number of small water flowing rivers were ending up in one of the lakes, and then if the water in that lake was at the higher level that it could hold the water, it was flowing with one single river to another lake, and that was documented as a double lake water structure on the Mars. What it says is that a few million years ago that was, I'm sorry, not a few million years ago, well, about 1 billion, 1.5 billion years ago, that was a climate that was similar to the climate of that one that we have on the Earth right now. That's why NASA decided that today's vehicle that is going to arrive till the end of the year. It's going to have 40 compartments where a drilled samples of the underground of the Mars will be stored. And if I understood properly, that vehicle is planned to return back to Earth. But that needs a correction from... well, I have to look deeper into the material. Interesting is that scientists are looking at not only the remaining of the life from the past, but also possibilities if any kind of living organism could be beneath the ice cap. And to ensure.
Wesley, you have to give it time for the repeater to drop for Frank to respond. He's on Echo Link, and there's a big delay for that. So he was trying to key up, and you were going on. So you got to remember to drop it and leave it dropped for a while for him.
I do thank you very much for educating me in this area.
Now, Echo Link is a little bit annoying, Wesley, but I'm not sure it's that much annoying than the usual rule of letting a repeater drop for 3 seconds that I was reminded of endless times when I first got on repeaters around, 1979 or thereabouts, even though I'd been a hand for almost 10 years before that. I mean, 2 meters just seemed like such a wasteland at the time. I just couldn't justify asking my dad to buy me a 2-meter radio in those days. In any case, the issue about, say before, is that it may be full of perchlorates, which, as I understand it, are a form of salt that life as we know it does not like very much. But that still doesn't necessarily rule out the possibility that there's still some form of life there. And of course the issue is whether anybody really wants to send up a probe to detect it, because at least until recently there were a lot of people around who really did not want to know if there was life elsewhere. And there may still be a lot of people out there. Anyway, it's kind of a controversial area. But it sounds like NASA's moving in the direction of saying, yes, there may be life. Well, I'm going to get going. WB2BXL. Thanks very much for the story, though.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate taking the subject for the introduction.
Night, guys. See you next week.
Good night, Frank. Have a good week.
Dr. Roy, what is your comment? You have a few minutes to talk about possible life or any kind, any form of life on Mars.
It's possible. I don't know if it's probable, but it certainly is possible. There's no proof of it yet. It would be nice if someone went to the trouble of proving it. Well, you can't really prove against it, because if there is a little pocket someplace and you don't test that pocket, then you come up empty. So ultimately, it's difficult to totally disprove. But I would appreciate if they were a little bit more aggressive. I'm concerned that NASA is just using life on other planets as a public relations tool to rationalize budgets and not an actual goal that they have set up and that they're going to try to accomplish.
Yeah, I mean, look, if we would say that the temperature could be minus 10 to minus 30 degrees of Celsius, and we could have some salts dissolve, would that be deep sea-like environment for the living organism and to share?
It depends what's out there. On Earth, we have these things called extremophiles, which are not related to any other animal, any other kingdom that can survive incredible hardship, high acidity, high temperatures, corrosive chemicals that our body would just kind of dissolve in, and yet they just kind of suck it up and get energy from it. So, again, it sort of depends upon how long life had time to develop and get into niches where they could survive the problems of the environment. It's possible, but, you know, you don't know until you look.
Yeah, it would be great if we could even find any reminding of past life, deer. That's why I unfortunately started the last week discussion about idea and matter.
Yeah, I would be interested if there's present life, if there's past life, what kind of past life there was. The trouble is that it sort of depends if there was any. It might not be able to, we can't perceive what the hell it might have been. If there were single-celled organisms, it's kind of difficult for them to fossilize under Mars circumstances. So, again, it sort of depends upon what may or may not have been there before Mars became so uninhabitable. But, you know, eventually mankind will get curious enough to figure it out. You know, I don't know. It'll be interesting. Probably not in our lifetime.
How do you know that? Well, we could even trigger the ambitious new Mars mission to drill into the Barrett water pocket, like has been done for subglacial lakes in Antarctica on Earth. I actually have seen some science fiction movie in this area, but yeah, look, you never know. There was a nice estimate, let me drop. If we were to eliminate the money spent on armory, we could put in space one spaceship per day to Mars. Interesting.
Well, now you're getting back to genetic manipulation, because you would have to modify our gene sequences to get us off the track of more boom boom.
You say so. And you say it's genetical.
Yeah, unfortunately, if you go to the zoo and you see the chimpanzees and you see the gorillas, you know, they're in kind of family clusters. They're in tribes. We have tribes too. And if you're not in our tribe, we want to have nice hard bones to smack you over the head with them. So I don't think that's going to change too soon. So I'm figuring, you know, if you're going to invest in something, probably invest in the Defense Department, because they never seem to have a downtime.
Yeah, I really don't want to go to the uncomfortable areas of discussion. The officially TechNet already ended. If we have a matter and we have a chemical chain of reaction, and at some point, based on modern science, we could have a simple organism that evolved to a much more complicated one. Let me drop. Then those organisms have made far into something that could operate with the brain, and then the brain function. I'm not sure if consciousness is something that is absolutely required for a brain function to create an idea. So the philosophical conclusion would be that idea could model matter, but matter can make ideas. And I would love you to say a few words about it.
Well, I mean, ideas are kind of a biological and mostly human concept. As you go up to more and more complex multicellular organisms, you get more complicated neurological systems. At the very beginning, they're incredibly rudimentary and pretty much reflexive. They just do things. They react. They don't ponder. When you get up to a certain level of complexity, there's learnable aspects. You know, you go from an organism that has their read-write tab stuck in read-only, and they're hard-coded for it. And as you go up the complexity, they're more writable and adjustable, and they get cleverer and cleverer. And porpoises are a wonderful example of very smart mammals that aren't human beings, and chimpanzees and gorillas. Whether they're sentient? Probably. Can you prove it? No. But can you really prove that I'm sentient? Not really.
That was deep. That time right. How often did you go deep? Into Asian.
Well, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. These are kind of metaphysical things. As I mentioned the other week, I'm not really a Cartesian dualist. I am a deconstructionist. I very much think that our thoughts are the process of electrochemical, synaptic things going on. Because if you interrupt them, thoughts get interrupted. You know, if someone knocks you unconscious, and you wake up 3 days later, it's not like you've been sitting and pondering the universe for those 3 days. You wake up and say, what the hell happened? What do you mean it's 3 days later? So I'm thinking that we're just kind of mechanistic. It's not nice to think that way. We all think we're kind of special, and we have a spark someplace in us, and I hope for the sake of everyone we do, but I don't see any particular indication of any spark.
I'm just thinking how to respond to that. I don't want to get into trouble. Okay, I'll let you drop. Look at this way. You have an electrical impulse, but you knock somebody in the head, and that electrical impulse is interrupted. But it wouldn't exist if there was no structure that is supporting the flow of electrical impulses. So matter was able to evolve to the point at which impulse-like mechanism was able to create some comments and some outcoming, and that would be called idea. Now, reverse-wise, it's impossible that idea could create matter. Idea could model matter. And that's why we have radios, telephones, technology, and everything, because based on the consciousness, we could model matter, but never create. Intuition.
Okay. I don't know what to say. I think that thought is ultimately an evolutionarily developed complex system that simply improved humans, in the case of humans, survivability to a certain degree. Clever, primitive humans survived better than less clever primitive humans, and so it's an evolutionary development based simply on survival of the fittest. I don't think it's that special. I mean, thought is a great thing, and I wouldn't leave home without it. But, I don't think it's, unfortunately, I don't think it's magical. I think it's quite functional. We don't know the details, and hopefully someday we'll learn some of the details. You got Elon Musk who wants to plug us into the Matrix or something like that. I don't know what exactly he has planned for anyone. But it's not easy. There are a lot of complications, and we don't have a serial bus. Because it didn't require our evolution to develop a serial bus. So we have parallel processors, and it's very difficult to plug into our brains completely.
Could you just shoot out straight in the face instead of going around? And at first there was a very much... not complicated mechanism, but it is still phenomenon if we're looking at the bacteria and its structure. And then we have a brain. So if you could just say about evolution of the beings to the brain structure, which eventually created consciousness and action.
Well, I mean, ultimately, the ability to transfer information back and forth inside a multicellular organism is a very useful thing. It allows you to coordinate specialized cells that can contract and move you in different directions. It can maneuver so that you can capture food and eat it so that you can have energy to survive and then to reproduce. And so the nature of evolution seems to be very, very simple, primitive things that slowly, by given enough time and the randomness of the mechanism, to develop more and more effective and complex structures. So the other modifications that spontaneously occur that are not consistent with improved survival die out, and the more complex and viable, useful ones are reproduced down the genetic line. So it starts with a single cell, it works its way up to multi-celled colonies, then a multi-celled simple organism, then specified cell lines, one of them being in charge of signal back and forth, and they grow into big clusters and get a little bit more complicated and are able to have more flexible behaviors, which improves their viability, and so the process goes. Not that we're the top of the pyramid, it just kind of it was in our benefit to get to be smarter, and so we got to be smarter. A lot of animals didn't need that. There's a price to be paid for intellect. Our brain requires a great deal of fuel and oxygen, and if it gets interrupted, it can kill us. So there's a price to be paid, but there's also a benefit.
Okay. So we came to the point where brain function was perfected by nature of certain animals or living organisms. Well, could I use the term living organism for that? To the point at which consciousness was born. Could you say a few words from that point?
Well, it's kind of difficult. Again, you can't absolutely prove that I'm self-aware. Just because I say I'm self-aware, I might be programmed to say that, so you don't know. So So the idea of consciousness is a very problematic thing. I think I'm conscious. I think you're conscious. I think most of the people out there listening tonight are conscious. I hope they are. Are monkeys conscious? Are porpoises conscious? Probably to a degree they are. They're probably not quite as sophisticated as we are, although for all I know, porpoises could be more sophisticated. You never know. Very few people chat with porpoises. It's an almost philosophical thing. At what point is complex brain function no longer reflective and recording and contemplative, if you will?
Okay, so we try to describe it. It would be animal consciousness or awareness as a qualitative state of self-awareness with non-human animal or being aware of external object or something within itself. Do you agree with that?
Well, yeah. I mean, you can see animals who have cognitive functions at certain levels, and you can even see little babies as they develop these cognitive functions that they didn't have last week, but they developed them this week, because the babies get born with a premature neurological circuit. It's not matured by far. So, you know, you give a little baby a toy, and you put it behind the curtain, and as far as that little baby is concerned, that ball has disappeared from the universe, because he doesn't kind of understand that the ball is behind the object that's put in front of it. But at some point, hopefully, he figures that out. And so there are circuits that go online. There are more primitive minds in animals where they simply don't have that circuitry that goes online. So there's no one and zero. It's not a binary, unfortunately. It's a continuum. And hopefully we're at one end of the continuum, and COVID virus is probably very close to the other end of that.
Yeah, I'm trying to go into the contrast between the state of consciousness and the creature consciousness as a contrast between the type of entity that is conscious. So state of consciousness is property of mental states. And if we go through the evolution, at which point that change happened?
Well, but again, I don't think there is a trigger point. I think it's a continuum. I think gorillas have been taught to use sign language, and they can actually construct new words based upon the original words given to them and adjust them for new and different ideas. Now, are they going to win a spelling bee? No. But that, to me, is thought. And the problem is that as you get into lower cognitive animals, it becomes much more difficult to figure out what the hell's going on inside. I mean, there's some very clever animal psychologists who try and trick animals into letting us figure out how their mind is working. So there's something going on in a lot of more complicated mammals and, you know, creatures with sophisticated nervous systems. Whether you want to call it thought or not is more a quibble of accountants and philosophers.
Yeah, at some point consciousness focuses on the contrast between the state of consciousness and a focus-based consciousness. And the question is, when I'm looking at the animals, say cats, which is a typical to them, and they have a patience for hours to look at something and focus on that something. But at the same time, they cannot control if we try to simulate the same with false subject of interest. If you could understand what I'm trying to say. It is like a genetically induced mechanism that it reacts on based on a particular scene independently if the scene is real or not. Would that be a distinctive border between consciousness and its early form of it, or consciousness and still lack of consciousness? Enter GS.
AC2GS. I think it's very difficult to figure out the difference between the two, unfortunately. Even we are kind of hardwired with a lot of things that probably ultimately we don't know why we do them. We make up good reasons because we're clever that way, and we do them even though they're not very effective, and we should know better that they're not very effective. But we're sort of doing them because we're hardwired to do foolish things sometimes. You know, neurological circuits do cut corners, and during the science talk, I did a couple of presentations where you can trick your brain into not bothering to think about something and get the wrong answer. So we're capable of not being conscious in some ways as well. A lot of times people will drive to some place and really not remember having driven there. They've done it on autopilot. And so, you know, there are some guys who are not self-introspective. You know, do they not have consciousness? I think they do. They just don't demonstrate it in that particular way. So I don't think you'll get too many philosophical gibbons, but, you know, I think there's something going on in a lot of animals to one degree or another. I don't like to anthropomorphize them. They're not human beings. They're something different, but there's nothing wrong with being different.
In one point in time, I can be in multitude of conscious states. So, say I'm currently enjoying perceptual experiences in various modalities, and that could be experienced with my next-door neighbor chainsaw, a visual experience of the other words on the screen in front of me, and a range of bodily sensation, feeling of limb position and stress. But I believe other mammals or some other mammals do not differ from me in this area. Or maybe I'm wrong. Interaction.
Well, again, it's a matter of degree. Human brains are capable of a great deal of abstraction. As you get more and more primitive, abstraction is much more difficult to deal with. It's much too complicated, and so they just respond to their surroundings and their hardwiring. But you take, again, something like a gorilla who's taught sign language. Their abstraction is relatively sophisticated. They can construct new terms when the need is required. So, again, are they conscious? I do not know. I have no way of proving it. But then again, I have no way of proving that anyone else is. And there are guys out there who are more than willing to try and get everyone to believe that we're all in the Matrix, and this is actually just an incredibly complicated computer simulation that some alien life force is running through just to check his math.
Yeah, I remember from 70s and 80s when I was attending classes of psychology, because I was extremely evolving philosophy at that time, and the evidence against one of the oldest ideas about consciousness, that a content of the awareness represented as a single unitary system, it made me thinking about neural structures that are responsible of awareness. The reason I'm touching the subject is because at the end of the discussion, I want to come back to the idea again and to exchange.
Well, you got to keep in mind, Wesley, it's 12:03 and the repeater's going to shut down in 1 minute.
Okay. Thank you for telling me that. Dr. Roy, the end questions. Was the idea first? Was the matter first? Because the matter, in my mind, could create an idea, and the idea can only model matter. And to exchange.
AC2G, I agree. I think matter came first. The egg became...
The time is 12:04 a.m. 73. And good night from the W2VL repeater. The time is 12:04 a.m. 73. And good night from the W2VL repeater. Tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. WA2GWA repeater. WA2GWA repeater. WA2GWA repeater. Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. WA2GWA repeater. WA2GWA repeater.